I'm Jason Aponte. That is Rob Stats Guerrera. This is the Bully Ball Podcast, the only podcast that gets ghosted by its co-host every so often. Rob, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, Jay, just got back from vacation. Took my last vacation of the summer. I'm back. Training camp starts in earnest on Saturday, and I'm locked in for the season.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. And you know, my efforts to lock in have been more about clearing out my list of movies and shows and things to watch, because when it's football time and it's go time, because I'll be covering four teams this season. So Rob, I don't know if you've got a chance to check it out, but have you been able to get out there to see the Odyssey yet?
No, I really want to go, because I've heard a lot of good things, and I guess it opened to a massive number, but I want to check it out.
Oh, it's incredible, man. And it's really making me like go through Nolan's filmography and start to list it. And I've gotten to a place where I believe The Odyssey is a top three Nolan movie. I am of the mind that Interstellar is Nolan's magnum opus. I don't think there's a movie that he's made. Oppenheimer's right behind it, and I think Odyssey's third, and then you'd put Dark Knight fourth. But Rob, I guess I'm too stupid. I don't understand Tenet. And I tried to watch it three times, and it doesn't make any sense. But everybody tells me that movie's really good, but I would have to keep it out of my rankings right now.
Well, I feel like sometimes that happens with movies where if you walk out and you're like, what the hell was that? People just automatically assume it was a great movie. It's like, not necessarily.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like, so I see Inception in here. Inception's a great movie, but South Park has kind of ruined that for me with that episode that they had where they're making fun of the overly convoluted premise and saying just because things are overly complicated doesn't make them good, even though Inception is good, but it did ruin it. Anyway, we're done with the movie talk, but I did mention nostalgia in the intro, and that's kind of what we saw with Avengers Doomsday. Like, they're trying to get everybody back in the nostalgia way, right? Star Wars can't make a movie that isn't a rehash of another movie. Literally every single non-Christopher Nolan PTA or Tarantino movie or Denis Villeneuve is some sort of reboot, remake. Nostalgia runs rampant. But there is a little bit of a campaign going on to bring back Deebo Samuel to the San Francisco 49ers. Rob, I know you have a strong opinion about this. The floor is yours, my friend. Should number 19 come back? Sorry, Jacob Cowan, you've got to give that up. And you let Pearsall keep one if you do come back.
No, but that's the point. You want that number 19 back, right? You want Deebo back. Guess what? Deebo ain't coming back, okay? You're getting Tyshawn. That's who's coming if they were to sign Deebo Samuel. I mean, no, okay? Did we forget what it was like when he was here? What happened? How he was unmotivated every other year? How his last season, he's complaining he's not getting the ball enough. He's dropping passes against the Rams. He drops what would have been the go-ahead touchdown pass. What, did we just forget all that? 2021 Deebo ain't walking through that door, okay? He's not. And I feel like there are people out there that are trying to get him a job with the 49ers. Oh, Deebo Samuel's doing leg lifts. He's in the best shape of his life. Sign with the 49ers. No, man. I don't care that he's not going to be the number one guy. You want to know why he's not going to be the number one guy? Because he's not good enough. He's not better than Mike Evans. He's not better than Ricky Pearsall. He's not, okay? I don't want Deebo Samuel to be the number three wide receiver. And you shouldn't either, just because you want to see him walk out with the damn boombox again. That's over, all right? You can't go home again. And Matt Maiocco just said, oh, well, Deebo is a little myth at the 49ers. Sign Mike Evans right away. That's the guy you want to bring in? He thinks he deserves a spot. He's mad he didn't get a spot. Deebo, you were nothing special last year. In fact, you've been nothing special since 2021. So, no, sorry. Go play for somebody else.
Rhode Island Niner says, what's up, Rob? Why are we even talking about Deebo? We have Watkins. Sorry. Okay. Anyway, all right, look. There's not a person in this world that could make me dislike Deebo Samuel, say anything bad about him. 2021 is one of the greatest seasons I've ever seen from any 49er. Sure, 5 years down the line, Jason, you're hanging on to nostalgia. Okay. All right, so let's look at this from a roster construction standpoint. Last season, Deebo Samuel had over 700 yards with the Washington Commanders. That offense was dog shit. And what I remember about that team, watching them a lot, you know, a lot of Marcus Mariota played, obviously Jaden Daniels. I just watched quarterback. I just finished it. And there's plenty of plays where you're watching Debo still got the juice. He's still, like, he's not washed. He's not washed. But the let me make the case for why it could be good for Debo to be here. If we're worried about Mike Evans not playing games, if we're worried about Ricky Pearsall not playing games, if we don't know what Dejon Stribling is, and I want to get to that, by the way, because Adam Schefter says something about Dejon Stribling that I really, really kind of want to push back on because it doesn't really sound like something that's actually true. It sounds like something that's been leaked to him and he being a mouthpiece for somebody. But if we're worried about Evans not making it through a full season, Pearsall not making it through a full season, do we know what Stribling is? Christian Kirk, he mentioned Jordan Watkins, Jacob Cowing. Like, if any of those guys miss time together, like if Evans and Pearsall are out together, that's very hairy. That is a hairy situation. Like, you're back to, hey, Malik Turner, what are you up to? You know, you got a job, or, you know, like, so here's the thing. I'm not pushing for it, but I do believe that the 49ers should be proactive, not reactive. And a lot of this is coming from a back and forth between Debo and Emmanuel Acho, where Acho called him, a mascot, a glorified mascot. Yeah, that was over the top. Because I don't know how he gets off making fun of other football players when I have to go 10 pages deep on Google to find his NFL stats. So that's fine. You can have an opinion. That's fine. But he makes the same point that you're making. You're not just going to bring him in just to be a returner. Being a third receiver, is this going to get in the way of Ricky Pearsall? Rob, I'm just thinking about being proactive. If we're worried about all these injuries and Debo's there, I do think he still has a little bit of juice left. I don't think it's going to happen because Matt Maiocco really, really threw water on the fire. And I think that was a well-placed story, basically saying that, yeah, he was miffed that they signed Mike Evans, but the 49ers have no real interest right now or anything like that. I just was kind of hoping that maybe Kyle was going to have one of those moments where you had to lock him out of the room or he was going to make the call. So for me, I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think it's the worst idea, Rob.
Well, Mayoko even said the Niners moved on without him, and I think he and Kyle Shanahan spoke about that after the fact. So he's telling you that not only was Debo miffed, but that Kyle and Debo had a conversation. And by the way, Kyle, that's nice of you to do. You don't owe Debo Samuel an explanation as to why you didn't want to sign him, but it was nice of you to do. How about the fact that your yards per reception have gone down in each of the past 3 years, from 15 to 13 to 10? Maybe that's part of the reason why we don't want you back, Debo Samuel. Maybe it's because when you weren't getting the ball, you didn't run hard. You didn't bust your ass. You barely blocked at times when you were called on the block. Go watch the Super Bowl, the McCaffrey touchdown or the Jennings touchdown pass. It almost gets screwed up because Debo doesn't put any effort into his damn block. I'm sorry, man. You cannot go back. I was against the Dre Greenlaw signing. I'm against the idea of bringing Debo Samuel back. You cannot go back. Those players are gone. And by the way, they weren't good enough at the time. When Debo Samuel was young, he wasn't good enough. Now he's 30 years old. Like, what are we doing here? I know people like this story. I know you want to bust your 19 jersey out of the closet again, or your one jersey out of the closet again. You're not getting that guy. I'm sorry. Now, if we get a bunch of injuries at wide receiver and Debo is still out there, maybe you don't have a choice. Maybe that's a different story. But right now, I say no.
I just think that nobody believes that they're getting 2021 Debo, right? Like, I don't think anybody's saying, hey, that guy's still in there because he hasn't been there. It's been 5 years.
Then why do you want him?
Because I am afraid of this wide receiver depth. And if we are so concerned, if why every time we speak about the receiver room, we have to say, if they are healthy, are we not being proactive in bringing in proven receivers? He's not washed. And if you think he's washed, not you, Rob. If anybody thinks Debo Samuel's washed, you didn't watch him at all in Washington. And that's fair because they stink. It's funny how the tide turns, right? Like Washington demanding for a receiver and now they kind of want that guy back. But if we're worried about these guys being all injured and no proven commodities behind it, and let's think about it in another way, Rob. If Debo Samuel was in the fold, you can lighten Christian McCaffrey's load with him in the backfield for one or two plays and give him a chance, man. I mean, look, he's not going to be here. I'm just saying this isn't some crazy idea. Debo is not washed, and that's insane to say because he had as many yards as like Ricky Pearsall, and he missed a bunch of games as well too. So you know, but either way, Debo's not washed, but this isn't happening. It's just a nice little exercise. I think what this has brought to the forefront, Rob, is this wide receiver depth is every time we speak about it, we have to say if they're healthy. You don't know what Jordan Watkins is. He might not even be on the team. DeMarcus Robinson, Jacob Cowing, Christian Kirk. But after DeJon Stribling, and we don't even know what Stribling is, it's just Evans and Pearsall. And if those two are hurt at the same time, God help us. Okay.
But isn't that if every team's top two wide receivers are hurt at the same time, aren't they in a bit of trouble?
Like, for
if,
sure.
If Cincinnati's top two wide receivers were hurt at the same time, who the hell's Joe Burrow throwing to? You know, there's not a lot of teams out there that can say we're cool. If the Rams' top two wide receivers get hurt, I mean, they got nothing behind Puka and Devontae Adams. You know, like there aren't a lot of teams that go, you know, four deep on the wide receiver depth chart.
I think more of it is when you look at the Bengals, they have proven wide receivers who, where it's not going to look like Chase and Higgins, but they're guys who have caught passes in the NFL. When you're starting to rely on guys that you've never seen catch a pass or can't catch or is just not good, that's where I get a little afraid. And that's it. And again, I do think that a little bit of a motivated Debo Samuel hearing all the whispers about people talking about that he's washed, if he turns it on for one more season and you give him nothing to come back, fine. But again, Rob, this was a fun 12-minute discussion. I kind of wanted to see how you were going to attack this because I know you're so against it. But yeah, it's right now. It's just a hypothetical, and I think Matt Maiocco really put it out with what he said on the podcast.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Let me ask you this, because sure. You know, we know the story now of Kyle Shanahan running up the stairs and stopping them from trading Brandon Ayuk. How Mike Silver had that big article about how they're not going to do that, how they're not going to make these emotional decisions. Do you think it's possible that Kyle wanted to bring Debo Samuel back and this time they didn't allow Kyle to make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very fair. I do think that everybody knows that Kyle has a soft spot for Debo, right? And I think you can see it play out on the field where there will be times where it wasn't 2021 and they were trying to continuously force Debo into getting the ball. And that Rams game is going to be the one that everybody, it's such a shame that because of the way his time ended, that for most people or some people, that drop against the Rams will be what you remember, which is not at all what you should remember about Debo Samuel, by the way. But that is going to be the lasting memory that you have of, number one, dropping that pass, and the same week saying, I'm not producing, I'm just not getting the ball. So that is what's got, you know, Rob seems to have that sour taste in his mouth. A lot of 49ers fans do. That's fine as well, too. I'm just thinking about reliability. I don't want to go into a football game with two receivers, three receivers that either one have never caught a pass or two are just absolutely washed. And for me, and I'm talking about DeMarcus Robinson, and I'm talking about that guy who's probably still going to stay on this roster. That's how good Jordan Watkins is, that they're going to keep DeMarcus Robinson over Jordan Watkins, by the way. I'm so tired of hearing about this kid, man. He hasn't done anything anyway. But it's really about just proving guys, and, you know, I'd like to see Debo with a chip on his shoulder. But what's going to happen is Debo's going to sit around. Something's going to happen in training camp to somebody, and somebody will knock on his door, and he won't be unemployed, you know? But yeah.
What was the thing about Stribling you wanted to say?
So Adam Schefter goes on, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Pat McAfee. And he says that there has been a lot of talk that DeJon Stribling was the most coveted number one receiver in the draft, and the Rams were targeting him. Okay, Rob, so I want to talk about this rationally. Okay. I'm going to leave my emotions out of it. Let's talk about this logically. Okay. DeJon Stribling is the most coveted wide receiver in the draft, and a lot of people believe he's the best. Then why wasn't he drafted first? There were six wide receivers drafted before him. Okay. Two, I like hearing that other teams were coveting DeJon Stribling. I think that's a good thing. But allow me to be on the other side of this. Unfortunately, just because other teams covet the same prospect that you covet doesn't mean that that player is going to develop. And I'm not saying that about Deshaun Stribling, but what I'm saying is, I don't care what you were saying about him before the draft. The results are going to be on the field, and that's what I need. Mm-hmm. I need the results on the field. If Deshaun Stribling goes out there and he just doesn't pan out, unfortunately, you know, against all odds and, you know, knock on wood, I'm going to take no sort of comfort in saying, well, you know, a lot of people were high on him in the draft, man. I don't care. But Adam Schefter, and you know what? I'm going to let you know right now. I'm going to let it fly. You are f***ing lying. There is no chance that Deshaun Stribling was the most coveted wide receiver. Mekhi Lemon exists. Jordan Tyson exists. He was the sixth receiver off the board. All you had to say to make this report have real validity was he was higher on a lot of teams' boards than people believed. The number one wide receiver in the draft. What on earth are you talking about? It does sound like somebody slipping in that information and using him as a damn mouthpiece again.
Yeah, I mean, come on. If he was that coveted, first of all, then somebody would have moved up once the Niners traded out at the bottom of the first round and to snag him, because then you get the extra, you get the fifth year option as well. It's just a weird, like Sean McVay has this thing, right? Remember, it was anyone that ever coached with Sean McVay got a head coaching job. Like, was it the Cardinals when they hired Cliff? Like, one of the things they put out was like friend of Sean McVay. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
This has that kind of vibe to it. Like, oh, the Rams really wanted him. Like, oh, okay. Then that makes it a better pick. Let's just see if he can play. And I'm so glad. I am so glad that we are going to now get to the point where we'll have actual stuff that we can talk about involving these guys on the field starting on, well, really Sunday, because Saturday they don't get out on the field, but training camp beginning this weekend.
Yeah. And Anthony Nagatani, shout out to you, man. The line I heard was that McVay had Stribling on his board as wide receiver one, but he was going back and forth with Mekhi Lemon before they took Ty Simpson, and they didn't know what they wanted to do right there. Like, if he was the number one receiver on his board, I mean, maybe he got overruled because they wanted Simpson, but I just have a hard time. How is he the most coveted or the number one receiver on the board and six receivers got taken of him? Like, that just doesn't jive. All he had to say the correct way was many teams were very high on Stribling, and he was high on their boards. I think that's fine. Again, I don't care what you thought about him before. Is he going to produce? Here's an example, Rob. The 49ers selected Jake Moody. I'm not even trying to be funny here. The 49ers selected Jake Moody. And 49er fans talked themselves into cope by saying Bill Belichick was going to draft him. Well, you know what? Idiots are idiots. Let him be an idiot and draft him then. Like, what? Like, why do you have to be an idiot just because Bill Belichick was going to take? Who cares? So I don't care who was interested in him. I do like the idea that people are talking high of him in circles. And I do think that it helps, because there was such backlash about the consensus pick, right, where he was, that I do think that people are leaking out this stuff, like, just to kind of soften the blow and kind of let people know, like, hey, we didn't reach. A lot of people liked him. This team liked him. That team liked him. You know, we had to. But either way, we're going to find out on the field. I really don't care what was thought about him pre-draft. Now he's in the building. Now perform and show it on the field. All this is moot. But I just wanted to point out that I found that quote very strange and insanely incorrect. Like, lying. Like, straight up lying.
Sometimes you, especially when it's quote unquote insiders, you got to apply a level of skepticism to what they say, because they trade in that game, right? They do favors for people. It's a favor industry. You put out that tweet, and an agent, you know, likes it, remembers it. They leak their news to you first about, you know, guys signing or whatever the case may be. So, and I agree with you. The whole consensus overdraft thing only matters on draft day. And then it's over. When Stribling scores a touchdown, you're not going to be like, oh, man, but they took him too high. Like, no. Can you play? Can you not play? That's the only thing that matters now.
Yeah, it's over. It's done. But I did find that funny, because I just don't understand why that would pop up right before training camp's about to get going and Deshaun Stribling's out there right now reporting as well, too.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Rob, we're talking about teams and everything, and I want to say this. This team of Avengers that is going to get absolutely decimated by Dr. Doom, what are we doing here, Rob? Why am I going to go watch an Avengers movie where nobody's going to lay a finger on this guy?
So I got a lot going on. I love comic book movies. I love comic books, always have. The Marvel, that first Infinity Saga is like one of my favorite things ever. It's goated. Awesome. Yes. I'm purposely trying to avoid any information about any of it, but I do know, obviously, it's Doctor Doom. If they're going to do it right, Doctor Doom should wipe the floor with all of them. He should kick all of their asses immediately, at least the first time they face him.
So I'm going to put it like this. Thor is Brock, and the rest of these Avengers are the 2025 49ers that he was carrying at the end of the season. What on earth is Falcon? He's not Captain America, by the way. What on earth is Falcon going to do to Dr. Doom? What on earth is the Thunderbolts going to do to Dr. Doom? What on earth is the Fantastic Four going to do to Dr. Like, this movie is going to be like, it's going to be like Mike Tyson against a five-year-old. Like, I'm just like, I understand that you probably want this to go that way where Doom is just going to eviscerate everybody and you got to bring everybody back. But my God, man, I really don't want to see Gambit get floored and wiped out. Like, you know, like, I'm just like, why are you picking the worst people to go after this guy? And where the hell's Spider-Man?
Yeah, Kendrick Bourne and Juwan Jennings are going to get it done.
Don't worry. Sam Wilson's here. He's got the shield and he's got some wings. What on earth is he going to do against Doom?
You know what? Shut up and take my money.
Hey, you know what? I will walk right out of Dune 3 and walk right into Doomsday on that same exact day. All right. Rob, training camp's here. We're getting to pads popping, battles. Rob, what is your biggest position battle that you're looking for at training camp? And I think there's a few of them that you can go with.
There are. The one I'm looking forward to the most, I continue to say, is the wide receiver room. And it's part of the reason why I'm not on the Deebo Samuel reunion train, because obviously you've got Evans. Pearsall is there. I think after that, it should be a free for all and let the best man win. If Stribling looks the best, guess what? You're wide receiver three. Congrats. I don't care that they signed Christian Kirk. Like, you're nothing special, Christian Kirk. If you can't beat out those other guys, you shouldn't be wide receiver three. So I want to see that. I do want to see Jacob Cowing. I'm not expecting anything, but I'm hoping. You know, remember Kyle's comments coming into training camp last year? He said Cowing was the most improved and the most prepared player of any 49er. He said it was Jacob Cowing. And then, of course, he pops his hamstring running against air on the first training camp practice, and we never got to see him again. I'm not hoping, but what I am hoping for is that Kyle opens up the competition and just says, whoever's the best wins, and doesn't just hand it to Christian Kirk or DeMarcus Robinson just because they're veteran guys.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's, again, like, when I say that DeMarcus Robinson is going to be on his roster, it's because Kyle can't trust anybody. The man's got trust issues. But when you're in, the trust circle, you can do whatever you want. You can miss a block. You can fumble a football. You can throw an interception. You're good. Don't worry about it. So yeah, it will be interesting with that. With Cowing, I'm rooting for him because I loved him in the draft process. That was one of the receivers I identified. And when I was in Detroit, I remember doing the pre-show, and everybody's talking about Jerry Rice's son. And I'm like, why would you draft Jerry Rice's son when Jacob Cowing is a far more explosive, better route runner? Now, fast forward to after that draft, you know, they drafted Pearsall and him. We still haven't gotten much, but I think one or two catches from Cowing. I really would love to see him get more. And I do think that he is a very talented football player. But if you're not available to play, it doesn't matter. So, Rob, I agree with you there with the wide receiver. A little shocked that you didn't choose this one, but I'm going to go with my training camp battle that I've got an eye on. We've got to figure out who the hell this left guard is. And I think when you're looking at this, and we did, I think I did a show on my channel. The offensive line for the San Francisco 49ers in 2025. Left tackle, middle of the pack with pressures allowed. I think we all say that Trent Williams is still very good, but he struggled a little bit, right? And there was two games that he missed basically because he got hurt on the first play of the game against the Bears, and then he misses the Seahawks game, and, you know, God help you, whoever was there in those games to try and block. Okay. The right side, Dominic Pooney and Colton McKibbitz are at the top of, like, least pressures allowed, right? So the right side feels good. It's center and left guard. And that's where all of the pressures were. That's where all those numbers were. They rated at the bottom. Now, left guard, you know, you Ben Bartsch for a game, Burford for a game. You've got to figure this out, and you've got to get it locked in, because that is going to be the place that everyone attacks when you know Jake Brendel and whoever it is, the left guard, is there. It, right there, that is, this team doesn't go anywhere if there is a absolute liability down to down at left guard, or at any position for that matter, or any offensive line position. I don't feel like there's a liability down to down. Maybe you could argue Brendel. I think he's a little bit better, though, in the run game. But you can't have someone who is just like, when you pop on the tape, you look and you're like, oh my God, this guy is horrific. And they need to figure that out.
Especially the deeper into the season you go. When you get into the playoffs, and especially deep in the playoffs, liabilities like that get exploited. They just get absolutely torn to shreds. Teams are, they're hyper-focused in on it. It's like, oh, that's where you're weak. We're going to attack there every single time. And it just, it always, always, always comes back to haunt you. You can't have glaring weaknesses on your team. And they don't need an all-pro at left guard. They need, just give me NFL average. NFL average, okay. You know, obviously you hope for more than that, but that's got to be the standard. That's got to be the floor. NFL average. They haven't had that the past couple of years. Aaron Banks really struggled his last year at left guard. Obviously, we know what happened last year. They've got to find NFL average at left guard. Can it be Connor Colby? Doesn't sound like it the way they've been talking about him. Could it be Robert Jones? I hope. Just give me that and I'll be happy.
Yeah, you know, I kind of miss Aaron Banks now after we've seen the level of play that we I mean, that's just where we are right now, right? And, you know, again, I don't know if anybody notices this, but PFF has the quarterback annual, and they have this really, really, really good, this good section of data on who's responsible for the pressure. And sometimes pressures are on the quarterback. The ball has to be out. And they gave it to Brock Purdy 22 times that he was dinged for allowing a pressure, getting the ball. I think that is something else that you need to incorporate. Again, Rob, offensive line is threefold. Quarterback getting the ball on time, wide receivers getting themselves open, and blockers blocking. It is not one or the other. It's all three of those things in tandem. So this is the part that we really need to lock in, the left guard, and to figure out, because everybody knows where to attack the 49ers, and it's going to be in that spot. Robert Jones is a veteran, but when you hear broken neck, that's not exactly what I want to hear you recovering from. Like Fred Warner, his ankle turned the other way, but I have no doubt in my mind that Fred Warner is going to be fine. Right? Like that's not an ACL or an Achilles. Like he'll be fine. But when I hear broken neck and he's possibly the left guard, like, okay, you know, I hope he's recovered, but that's a scary injury to come back from. So I'm looking at left guard, and I want to figure out what the rotation is. There is one other thing that I wanted to ask you about too. Our good friend Dante Whitner was talking about the safety position, and he was talking about, you know, Jair Brown, Malik Mustafa, and he actually made a very good point in saying that if Jair Brown doesn't start, or Malik doesn't start to show anything within the first 4 or 5 practices, then they're going to start rotating people in. And they're going to start with Marcus Siegel, and they're going to start with Ashton Davis. So really, people believe that Jair Brown and Malik Mustafa have the entire camp. You probably have the first few practices to really show where you are, because they're going to give other people opportunities to win that spot. Safety is a huge concern going into this season.
And think about what that means when we say rotate. That means how many snaps are you actually getting? How many chances in a practice are you getting to show where you've improved or that you've improved, right? If they're rotating guys in, it's not many. And so it's very, very difficult from that point on to earn your spot. I hope he does. Look, I was, when he came in as a rookie in 2019, I'm sitting, or not 2019, 2023. And, you know, he comes in late in the year and then he intercepts Mahomes in the Super Bowl. And I'm like, oh my God, like maybe we got something here with this guy. And it just never, he was never better than that. And so I hope that this is the year that he puts it together, but they shouldn't wait longer than that. Like, what has, he hasn't earned more than, you know, the first few days to get a chance to prove himself based on his play last year. I know he thinks it was great, but it wasn't.
Let me ask you this. There's 3 49ers superstars. There's a lot of 49ers players that are returning from injury, but there's 3 49ers superstars that are returning this year. Which would you say is the most important to the team's success? Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, George Kittle?
It's definitely one of the defenders. No disrespect to George Kittle.
For sure. For sure.
But Tonjes actually was solid. He was viable as a backup tight end. I'm going to say Fred Warner. It's really close. Here's why I might give Warner the edge. He gets everybody else lined up. Nobody knew what to do when 54 went down. He helps the safeties. He helps the other linebackers. Now, Dre Greenlaw being back for however amount of time he's back will help too, because they have a very good mind meld. So he knows he doesn't have to straighten out Dre Greenlaw essentially. But I guess Fred, but it's really, really close. And I totally understand if you say Bosa. Plus, I feel like Fred, he makes it happen. He generates turnovers. He generates fumbles. He makes plays. So I'll give it to Fred, just an edge, but it's real close.
I have no doubt in my mind that Fred Warner is going to be fine. I mean, for God's sakes, if they would have played him one more game last year, he probably would have played. So he's fine. He's going to be fine. But if Nick Bosa goes out there and he doesn't put up numbers and he isn't the pass rush guy that we paid for, or like the DPOY guy, this defensive line is screwed. This defensive line is screwed. And if you hated what you saw last year from the pass rush, if he's not going, then Osa can't go, then Michael can't go, then Romello can't go. Fred is the quarterback of the defense. But I'm not even hesitating to say that there's not going to be anything wrong with him this year, because he turned his ankle the other way. They fixed it. He's going to be fine. Nick Bosa is returning from his third ACL tear. Third. And if he does not go, if he is not pressuring the quarterback, if he is not delivering sacks, this 49ers defense is far closer to last year's defense than it would be an improvement on this year's defense. So Nick Bosa has to come back and perform. Has to. He is the most important player on his defense because of the cascading effect of him. When you pass rush better, your secondary's better. Now, when Fred Warner's there, the secondary knows where the hell to go. And that's really important, because that went out the window. Tatum Bethune was trying his best, but he couldn't. But my God, if Nick Bosa comes out here and he's either starting slow or isn't the guy that we expected, that is a huge blow to this team and their aspirations for a Super Bowl. He has to be a double-digit pressure monster, Rob, like right away when he gets back.
That's why it was so close, because I agree with everything you said. He is the best pass rusher they have. The attention that he generates will open things up for other people like Osa, like Michael or Romello Height, who we're all hoping can, you know, at least impact the game in certain ways on passing downs this year. He has to be that. And if you don't have that on defense, they talked about it last year, closers, right? And we saw it in the first two games of the year. The first game ended because Nick Bosa shoved Abe Lucas into the back of Sam Darnold, and then he recovered the fumble. And the second game was Bryce Huff coming off the edge with the speed rush, knocking the ball
and Michael pushing the pocket.
Yes. Like, you, those guys are the closers. The Niners absolutely did not have that last year once he went down, and it was glaring. It was haunting, basically. It was so frustrating. And that's what Nick Bosa can provide. And like you said, if Bosa can do it a little bit, that'll help Michael, and it'll help the other people on the line as well. So it is a huge point. I agree with you. And by the way, I think, honestly, if Bosa doesn't have a great year, it may be his last year with the team based on his contract situation. I don't think it's out of the question. I believe his cap number jumps in a huge way next year. If I can pull it up real quick, Nick Bosa's cap number this year is 22.9. In 2027, it's 54.8. Now, I know they can always renegotiate that, but the Bosas don't play around when it comes to renegotiations as well. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, in my opinion, that this could be Nick Bosa's last year with the Niners. But hopefully he flashes and comes back to the guy we love, and we don't have to worry about that.
The defense is going to go as he goes. If he's dominant, then the secondary, you have less worry about the safeties and the corners. Fred is going to be Fred. No matter if the pass rush is there or not, Fred is going to be dominant. That's just who he is. So for me, that him, it rubs off on the secondary, but I think Nick Bosa's, his impact is a cascading effect, not only on all of the pass rushers, but everybody in the secondary. And this 49ers team that was horrendous at rushing the passer. Cleveland Farrell led the team in sacks last season. He was tied with Bryce Huff. this cannot continue. And this is not how you're going to be able to compete with the Rams and the Seahawks and anybody else that you run up against on in the AFC.
You know what? I'll give another point in Warner's favor too, as well, mm-hmm. is, and this is not a shot at Nick Bosa, but Warner is the vocal guy on that defense. He's the guy that gets everybody fired up. He's the guy, I feel like, that they always talk about the standard, the 49ers standard. I feel like he's the one that enforces that.
For sure.
And that matters, you know, like, especially this defense is so young. Mykal Williams is young. Alfred Collins is young. Renardo Green is still young. Siegel, Mustafa, Lenore is still young. Fred is the one that sets the standard and holds everybody accountable. And I think they really missed that last year, too.
Yeah, and the thing is this, is like I said, Fred is going to be Fred regardless of the people around him, right? But after he got injured in that Bucs game, you did kind of see the 49ers' shoulders drop. Like, you know, like really? you know, and I just remember after that game doing the post-game show and people are like, you know, oh, you know, the loss. And I'm like, forget the loss. Fred Warner, man. Like, you know, the loss is it's one loss in the box score. But losing him is so much more. So I just think that, you know, if Bosa is who he is, then it's going to help people all over the field. And it's going to allow Raheem Morris to not have to worry about dialing up more pressure. He can be somebody who can, you know, hang guys back in coverage. So, look, there's no wrong answer here. And George Kittle's a fine answer as well, too, because when he's on the field, you talked about attitude adjuster, tone setter. That's him. And Luke Farrell, I don't know what you do, but you don't block. Jake Tonjes, you don't block. If Kittle's not there, the running game was already struggling last year with him there. I shudder to think of what it looked like without him for a long stretch of time. So it is, you know, none of those are wrong answers at all. But those three guys, again, there's a lot of 49ers players returning from season-ending injuries. There's only three 49ers superstars that are returning from injuries, and the 49ers need all three of them. All right, almost 40 minutes. Shout out to everybody here on the Tuesday night, 8:41 Eastern time. All right, Rob, I wrote an article today. It's going to come out tomorrow on that website that I write for. Here it is. I've got five choices for you, and I'm going to name them. D'Amador Lenore, Dominic Pooney, Ricky Pearsall, Cole McKivitz, Osa Odigizua. Which of those five is most likely to be a first-time Pro Bowler in 2026?
To me, this was pretty easy, and I'm going to go with Osa Odigizua. It does predicate itself on Nick Bosa coming back and being impactful, because like you talked about, I think he opens up a lot of things for Osa. But just look, process of elimination at the other spots. It's super hard to be a first-time Pro Bowler on the offensive line. A lot of those are reputation Pro Bowl berths.
Oh, yeah.
At left guard and at right tackle, there's a lot of competition. And that's no disrespect to McKivitz and Pooney, especially McKivitz, who I feel like has turned himself into a damn solid player.
Very good.
But it's very, very hard to break through an offensive line. Wide receivers, just incredibly. I mean, even in the NFC West, you've got competition with JSN and Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams, let alone Justin Jefferson in Minnesota, CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens in Dallas.
Not you, Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, no. You're not included. One of these things is not like the other. So I couldn't put Ricky there, even though I love Ricky. And then Lenore, you have to get picks to make the Pro Bowl at corner. Yeah. You just do. And he's got 8 in 5 years. He doesn't have enough. So, again, sorry, D'Amador Lenore, but you need interceptions. You don't really do interceptions. So, to me, it has to be Osa Odigizua.
All right. So, I don't know if you got to read my article before it dropped, but you literally stole what I said about Pooney and McKivitz. It's literally less about the players that they are and about the players that will be selected. Like, Dominic Pooney started the season with that freak injury. Remember the day we hung out and we were watching on the phone? Freak injury against the Raiders. That really slowed his season down. But towards the end of the season, he was great. And then McKivitz, you're just stuck at a premium position where guys with names are going to get put ahead of you because you've been far more efficient than a lot of the guys that they put up there at the top. I'm not here to argue with you. If you don't like objective data, that's your business. But yeah, their legacy guys are going to get in, right? Like, so it's hard to make it on the offensive line. Like, I feel like all Trent Williams has to do is just play 16 games and he's a Pro Bowler. I think there's a lot of guys that are like that, you know, and there's some up and coming right tackles that are probably going to be like that as well too. I actually chose D'Amador Lenore. And here's why. I do believe that the biggest boost that's coming to the 49ers defense from Raheem Morris being the defensive coordinator is going to be in the secondary all around. I think Renardo Green is going to have a very good year. I think D'Amador Lenore is going to turn himself into a very good player. And I think it is going to be off the bat the fact that Raheem Morris is going to ask D'Amador Lenore to go with this guy, go follow him, play more man. I think that's what Demo wants to do. I think Demo wants to be lined up against JSN every single play and see where the chips lay. I like that in a corner. You have to be almost delusional at cornerback. You have to be. The irrational confidence, because you have to be able to stack play after play after play, and it's you on the other side. So I think it's D'Amador Lenore. What I found interesting is last year, he gave up 5 touchdowns. The year before, he gave up 0. In the previous 3 years, he gave up 5 combined. That has to stop. That has to stop, okay? The touchdown thing has to stop. But I do think that D'Amador Lenore is the one who stands to benefit the most from Raheem Morris being there, because I think him and Renardo Green are probably more suited to be man-to-man guys, follow guys, play a little bit more bump and run, and play, because you could see it over and over with Renardo, right? He's getting pulled off of to the sideline because he's out of position in cover 3. And that's all they were running was vanilla cover 3, with hoping to God that 4 were going to get home. I think Raheem Morris has a good track record with his cornerbacks, especially in Atlanta. I know Jeff Obrick was a defensive coordinator, but AJ Terrell and Jesse Bates, and they had some guys over there. I do think that the biggest bump is coming for D'Amador Lenore, and I do think that Raheem Morris is going to allow him to play a little bit more freely and let him get into his confidence bag, which he seems to like when he's talking all the time, right?
I would like that a lot, honestly, because yeah. I felt like for the past couple of years, the 49ers defense has been very just passive. Like, they just wait for the offense to do something to them. They weren't attacking. Like, get after it. Show some fire. Show some fight. That John Lynch on 3rd and 18, when the Seahawks convert that run, and he's in the booth and they cut to him, he said the exact same thing I said in my living room, which was, damn it. Like, because it just, all year it was us saying, please don't hurt us. Okay, with 3rd and 18, we'll give you 15. Just please don't get 18. Like, no, man. We got to attack it. We got to get after it.
What about Upton Stout? Is he somebody? Because down the stretch last year, he was really good. And again, a lot of this stuff is coming back into my head, because even though there's no 49ers involved in the quarterback series on Netflix, they keep recounting 49ers games that all these guys played. Like, Baker played us, and you see Upton Stout, you know, clobber him on a touchdown. And I was like, yeah, that's right. He got after him in that game. So there was a lot of 49ers stuff in there. There was 4 of them. It was Flacco, Jaden Daniels, Baker, and oh my God, why can't I remember the 4th? Either way, they kept bringing up the 49ers, and I remember being very impressed with Upton down the stretch. I think that carries over. And again, it'll go back to what I was saying about D'Amador Lenore, Renardo Green. Raheem Morris's effect can't be understated, and I do think Upton Stout is going to be somebody who sees the benefits of that.
He definitely is a guy that has that fire. That's what I like about Upton Stout, is like, he ain't afraid to get in there. He tackles well. His coverage was a little dicey at times, so I hope that he improves in that area. But I love the personality. I think there's definitely potential there with Upton Stout. And good. Like, the more attitude and firepower they have, great, because they're going to need it. The defense was just lacking. Like, they were the problem last year, even with all the issues on offense with the injuries. The defense was the problem last year, in my opinion.
Yeah. For sure. And the 4th quarterback was Cam Ward. So they showed that 49ers game where he was throwing to, you know, Jeffrey Simmons for a touchdown as well, too. It made me pretty upset. But yeah, look, I think there is a path for any of these 5. Is the path harder for some than others? I definitely think that with Pooney and McKibbitz, I think Pooney is going to have an incredible year. Clear the injury, really showed something down the stretch. Really think the 49ers have found themselves one there. You know, McKibbitz is just going to have to, you know, those legacy, like you said, you nailed it. The legacy right tackles that just are, you know, again, and look, all right. I want to say this, but I also don't want to, I guess, downplay being a Pro Bowler. But when Shedeur Sanders and Snoop Huntley become Pro Bowlers, doesn't it feel like some of that stuff doesn't matter anymore? Look, all right, but at the same time, being recognized as a Pro Bowler, it still is impressive, right? Like, Fred Warner's alive and breathing and playing, he's a Pro Bowler. Nick Bosa's alive and well and breathing, Pro Bowler. Trent Williams, Pro Bowler. You know, same thing. Christian McCaffrey, Pro Bowler. But having someone who gets into that role and takes over, that would be something that would be a huge development for the 49ers. So, again, we laugh at the Pro Bowl now because of who's getting invitations as replacements and everything because of either people just declining their invitation or they're playing in the Super Bowl. But at the same time, if one 49er makes the Pro Bowl for the first time, and if it is Osa, that just falls in line with what I've been saying all offseason about him and why I think he's primed to be an incredible player, then it would really boost up this team very well. So having your guys play on par and setting your watch to them is one thing. But getting someone to play at a higher level and become among the NFL's best, that would absolutely boost this team and absolutely put them in a spot where people would say, you know what? We slept on the 49ers. Here they are again at the end of the season with a chance to make a run at it.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
Week one against the Rams. If they somehow come out of that with a win, what a statement that would be.
I can't wait.
Hey, stop talking to us, you know, like we're the third best team in the division. We come out, we fly 19 billion hours to Australia. We stuff the Rams in a box, and then we come back for week two ready to roll. What a statement that would be.
Rob, without hyperbole, week one this year is the most excited I've been for any week one ever.
Wow.
And I've made myself very clear on my stance. And I read the comments when Rob posts the clips of things that I say. And I said, I don't care if Aaron Donald's coming back. Bring him, bring Marshall Faulk, bring Adam Archuleta, bring Isaac Bruce. Let's line it up. And I'm so sad. This actually made me sad. People on the internet don't make me sad, but these comments made me sad. 49er fans giving up. So here's what I'll say. If you're a 49ers fan and you're afraid of the big bad Rams and Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett, when they win, don't celebrate. Do not celebrate. Don't celebrate because you never thought they were going to win. I just don't understand how you can go into these games already. Oh, you know, well, whatever. We're going to lose. And for me, having confidence in a team that has beaten the Rams. By the way, the Rams are not going undefeated. Has beaten the Rams with a hodgepodge of guys and Mac Jones, has beaten the Rams in big games. Now, all of a sudden, they have no shot. So here's what I'll say. If you're a Rams fan or if you're a 49ers fan who is scared, go to church and don't watch week one. And if they win, don't celebrate because it's over. They're going to lose. Oh, wow. But I get flack because I'm confident in a team that wins a bunch of games, Rob. What the hell is that?
I mean, look, it's not great that they got Myles Garrett. It's going to be a hell of a lot harder. I understand all that. But if you think the 49ers can't win week one, I guarantee you they don't. They're not sitting there scared of the Rams. Yeah, they got more work to do. This just in, if you want the 49ers to get where they are going, right, to win a Super Bowl, which is what we all want, you think they're going to have to beat the friggin' Titans to get there? No, you're going to have to beat good teams. So let's start week one with a good team. We'll see where we are. And take it from there. But I'm not sitting there scared. I'm saying, great. I want to beat that team. Because then what does it say about us if we beat that team? And we'll see if the Niners can do it.
To your point, Rob, the 49ers beat the Seattle Seahawks last year. The Seattle Seahawks won the last game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Not how you start, how you finish. But would be super sweet because I bookmarked so many tweets. Rams fans are feeling themselves. Rams fans have, there's never a doubt. Okay, good. I like that. I want you to keep that energy. But I really am sad that 49ers fans are just like packing it in. And it's just, you can say in one breath, I don't like Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald being here. They have the MVP at quarterback. They have a really good head coach. They actually, the part that should scare you a little bit more is the secondary. You get your cornerbacks. And they were awful in the secondary last year. But I don't understand how you could just sit there and you're not excited about week one and you give the chance. If you think the 49ers have no chance, then put your rent money up on the Rams. Better hope you're right. You better hope you're right. Because I saw way too many comments about, like, who does this guy think he is for a second? for having confidence in my team that wins a bunch of games? Yeah, I'm completely irrational. You guys got me. I'll never understand it. Rob, be positive, get shit on. Be negative, get shit on. I don't understand. I don't understand. If I literally would have came on the podcast and been like, guys, I have a feeling the Rams are going to beat them 41-6. Oh my God, this guy. Hey, I have a feeling the 49ers are going to beat the Rams. Oh my God, this guy. What is your deal, people? Please tell me how to act so I know how to act. One thing, two, I remember last year when Mac was starting and they were giving the Rams 8.5, and I was telling you all week, don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. The only time the Rams have blown out the 49ers was the second meeting last year. Mm-hmm. Every other game has either been a very close game or a 49ers win. So now all of a sudden I'm under the impression that blowouts are about to start happening. It's not happening. So again, guys, if you're a 49ers fan, just please show a little, like, buck up. Buck up a little bit. I'm tired of the glazing. And 49ers fans glazing the Rams, that's probably even worse, Rob.
The Rams are good. This just in. So are we. Like, and it's going to be two good teams, and they're going to fight, and let's see what happens. But, you know, how often does this whole, like, oh, dream team thing in the NFL work out, by the way? Every time I've heard it, it's crashed and burned. The Bucs won the Super Bowl, and then they brought every single person back the next year. Every starter. It was the first time it ever happened. They didn't win the Super Bowl that next year. The Rams didn't even win the Super Bowl last year, and they had a lot of good things go their way last year, which you always need in order to make a Super Bowl. So, to me, bring it on, man. Let's see. And then what do you do if you're a Rams fan and the Niners beat you week one? How shook are you if you're like, damn, we had all our guys. We had Stafford and Adams, and we even dusted off the ghost of Aaron Donald, and you still couldn't get it done? Okay.
By the way, one last thing, and please don't clip this, Rob, because I already made my Rams, rant. You know, you already don't use this one. But am I to understand that Aaron Donald returning puts them back on the hook for $30 million extra dollars?
Yeah, I gotta figure that out, because apparently, and I guess what is happening now is, like, he didn't want to come in and play for the league minimum, which, by the way, he shouldn't.
Like, at all.
If you're Aaron Donald, you had a Hall of Fame first ballot, walk in the Hall of Fame, no question about a career. You got out. You're obviously in good shape. Your body's in good condition because you're in incredible shape. You want to go back in now to what? To win another Super Bowl and risk, you know, like, I wouldn't do it for the league minimum if I were him, for sure.
Yeah, and he shouldn't. He signed a contract that they're beholden to. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to get it, you know, to not have that number, like, balloon their cap space or anything like that. But I did find that interesting. I did find that interesting that they could be adding that contract in there. People just assume Aaron Donald's going to come back and play for free. Yeah. I wouldn't. I don't think he is. So I think that's interesting, you know. And Anthony, he's only coming back because Brunskill doesn't play for the 49ers anymore. The ace in the sleeve is that he's on speed dial for that game for week one. To get Brunskill in, he'll be playing left guard. and I think he was in Miami last year, actually, because I saw him a few times, and I'm like, there he is. Like, you know, those Shanahan ties to teams that, you know, have Shanahan-like coaches, they love recycling their players. They all, like, look for the same things with the offensive line. So, Rob, I think I wanted to... Again.
Oh, sorry, I'm just reading. If Donald wants to return, it's unprecedented. When he retired, his cap number was $26 million. It's unlikely Donald gets that much, but he also won't settle for a one-year, $3 million contract either.
I want it to happen. I really want it to happen at this point. I want it to happen because you're putting yourself in a position where you can't lose now. Like, you can't lose. And if you do lose, everyone's going to point and laugh. I wouldn't want to be in a situation like that where it's, oh my God, if we, like, you know what's scarier? In a game like this, the 49ers have less to lose because nobody believes they're going to win, even their own fans, some of them, right? But what about if you're absolutely expected to win? Everybody thinks you're going to win every single game. You're going to roll to the Super Bowl. Like, that pressure, watching that type of game, it's annoying. Because even if you win by a little, people are going to be like, damn, you struggled? You struggled with the 49ers? And you have Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald? Like, all the pressure's on you. It's not on the 49ers. The 49ers could walk out of Australia conceivably 0-1 with their heads held high and not worried about the rest of the season. But I guarantee you, if the Rams are 0-1, oh, baby, Let's start firing the cannons and let's start panicking. Everybody set the roof on fire at this point.
If the Rams lose, three of their next four games are Denver, Philly, and Buffalo.
That's not easy. It's not easy. Yeah. So, you know, look, the 49ers schedule is going to be a little bit tougher at this point. But another thing that's kind of bothering me about the whole, like, Rams taking over, is nothing going to go wrong with the Rams this season? Is every single player going to be healthy? Is nobody going to regress? Are there going to be no special teams gaffes? Because that's literally what cost you that Seattle game and probably cost you home field with that two-point conversion. Like, is everything going to be perfect? When has that ever happened, Rob, where everything is perfect? So, again, I like the 49ers' position here because nobody's expecting them to win, but I would hate to beat the Rams right now because you have to win. And you can't even – if you beat the 49ers on a last-second field goal, you know what we're going to say? What are you struggling with us for and you have Myles Garrett and all these guys? Like, maybe you're not like that. So, yeah, there's my Rams rant. You know, I'm just tired of it. The glazing has just gone too far. It's just too far.
And luckily, we're ever closer to actually seeing it play out. Now the training camp is here. We'll have preseason football coming up as well. Thank God, because I can't take much more preview, man. I want to get into it. I want to be reacting to what actually happens.
Yeah, and shout out to everybody that's going to be at training camp. I wish I could. I'm walking basically normal again, so I could get out there conceivably. But the fact that they put all that training camp date like so late, like it just makes the flights to San Francisco or San Jose like $700. And it's like, hey, listen, you know, I have a bunch of jobs, but I also have two kids, and I don't know if I could be able to afford all that, you know. So, but shout out to everybody that's going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to sift through the information. One person is going to say that Ricky Pearsall had a great day. Another person is going to say that Ricky Pearsall looks like he's regressing. One person is going to say that Dejon Stribling is going to be the best rookie since Jerry Rice at wide receiver. Another person is going to say that Dejon Stribling should be tied to the substation. So I can't wait to figure out what on earth is going to be said, and we can decipher from our favorite people who we feel are giving us the best information.
Yeah, just keep in mind, too, when you're at quote-unquote 49ers training camp, they put you – you need binoculars to see what's going on in the field. Like, literally, you – the beat writers and the content creators that are there are bringing binoculars. That's how far away they put you. So just – you know, I'm going to react to all the training camp reports as well. But it's very – and I'm not saying this to ding anybody. It's difficult to see what the hell is going on.
You know why they're doing that, right?
Because they don't want people there.
They don't want us talking about what's actually happening, and they want to control the narrative.
Yep.
They want to control the narrative, and they want to make sure that nobody can get videos, or even if, like, you know, like even something as simple as like who's the first player out on the field. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not slick. And for anybody that says, oh, the team doesn't know who you are, or, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Because that's why they're pushing the dates out further and they're making you wait longer. Because when I went to the first training camp that I ever went to in 2020, they put the dates out months before. I was able to book my flight and book my hotel. Everything was fine. But when you put out the dates 7 days before it's about to start, it makes it very difficult to travel across the country on a flight. But yes, the 49ers are doing that to control the narrative. And not just from content creators, beat writers. Beat writers as well, too. And you know, I think you know who I'm talking about. We have a yin and yang in 49ers coverage. We have two guys that go about their business in different ways, but controlling the narrative is what the 49ers want. And that's why they push them so far across the field, and they make it difficult for everybody to go ahead and get tickets to these things because they don't want us hopping on YouTube and talking about what we really saw.
And by the way, it's not just the 49ers. All NFL teams try and control the narrative. But to think that the 49ers aren't included in that is crazy. Like you said, everybody knows Grant skews negative. David Lombardi skews positive. That's just a fact. And other people fall somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. And that's part of the job in training camp. That's why we always say, read as much as you can from everybody. Because certain people have their biases, like we all do, and then certain people see things, are in a better position to see stuff. The more information you have, and then what I always do is, that's why I get excited for the preseason, because I try and line up, okay, this is what I'm hearing about this player, this player, this player. Now let me watch the preseason game for myself, and I can see what seems to be reality and what maybe isn't the case, and I can decide. So that's all I'm trying to do during training camp, is just figure out what I'm going to be watching for during the preseason.
And like you said, one's negative, one's positive. They're both entertaining. I cannot turn away. Like, I am completely entertained by both of them, because it's, you do need differing opinions. We all shouldn't be agreeing with each other. I mean, we should be disagreeing respectfully, which is something 49ers Twitter and myself have to work on. Like, admittedly, that's something I have to work on. We should disagree respectfully, but I do find them, you know, good. And you know, the person, and I hope he's there, and I'm going to send a text to him when I'm done here, because he's posting my article in the morning. The person that I really, really, really trust is KP. And the reason that I trust KP is he's coached, he's played, he understands scheme, and anytime that I have a question for him about what somebody was doing, it's not, oh, he caught a bunch of passes. It's, okay, look, he struggled a little bit getting off the line. I think press coverage could be an issue for him, or this guy has a lot of, like, he gives you detailed analysis, and it's not just because he's the guy that signs my checks, but, you know, it's more because I trust his football acumen, and there's a lot of other guys. Again, we're blessed enough as 49ers fans to have not only a spectrum of content creators, but a spectrum of beat writers as well too. So block out who you don't like and listen to who you do like and who you know think is giving you the best information, but you have a bevy of opinions, and all of them are valid one way or another. So I think we're blessed to have that much coverage, Rob.
The Niners have more. I was stunned at how many people were covering the 49ers when I started to do this. I was like, damn, there's like a whole other beat team when you look just at the content creators.
Dude, it's a box out. Like, it's trying to get a rebound on YouTube right now. it's literally trying to grab a rebound on here, man. I remember when I first started, and I know how like crowded it is now. And it was crowded back then. But we'll end on this. Biozio 186. Dude, you need to respectfully disagree with us Rams fans too. When pigs fly, my friend. This is a rivalry. I will be nice to my 49ers brethren, and I need to work on that. But you will get zero love from me. If you win, good game. But that's about it. That, look, we give the Rams his props, but that's where it stops. Sorry, man. This is a rivalry. We're not going to play nice here.
Respect.
Respect. For sure. That'll do it for this episode of Bully Ball on the Gold Standard Podcast Network. Thank you guys for checking in on the screen. Thank you to all the Golden Ticket members as well, too. You guys help the channel grow, and you keep us going as well, too. You know, maybe we'll get Steph back this week. But, Rob, thank you for stepping in as always, man. You know, she's going to make her joke, you know, next week. You know, I left you here with Rob, you know. So you know what you should do? You should come up with a soundbite for that. Like, boring, or heard that one before. Like, you know, like, I know it's a running joke and everything as well too. But guys, thank you again for joining us. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, hit that notification bell for when we go live. Make sure you're subscribed to the 49ers Gold Standard Podcast Network wherever you get your audio podcast. Make sure you follow Rob on Twitter at Stats on Fire. Follow me on Twitter at Jason Aparte 2103. Rob, we're close, man. I'm smelling it. We're about to be locked in. Gotta finish the rest of these. I gotta lock in with Spider-Man on the 31st, and then I'm free and clear, and I'm gonna be locked in on all the football teams that I'm going to be covering this year.
It's about priorities, Jay. It's nice to see you got your priorities in line.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be a father part-time, but you know what time it is. Like, especially since now I got to cover the Saints, the Vikings, and you know, the Steelers eventually when it starts next month. So I've got to start watching an exorbitant amount of film and making sure that I'm locked in, but no better time than football. I don't know what to do without football.
Amen. Perfect time to hop on board. If this is your first time checking out the channel, like the video, subscribe. I promise you, you come back, you'll like what you see.
Thank you guys for joining again. And as always, we're out of here.
Peace.